Well, hello, my friends. Good evening. Well, I should say good night. How is everybody doing? Let me know where you are listening in from tonight. Nicholas joins us on Facebook. He says, hi, Jay. Hey, Nicholas. Thanks for joining us. Where are you listening in from, Nicholas? Let us know. We always love to know where our listeners are chiming in from. Carl the Cricket is still, Nicholas says Utah. Be more specific, Nicholas. Carl the Cricket is still outside the window, blasting like crazy. Haven't resolved that yet. But please take a minute and say hello. I got some great topics for you tonight that I want to discuss. The first one, is it a violation of my civil rights if you don't wear a mask? Think about that for a minute. Let's see. Cheryl is joining us from Bluffdale. Mitch Pearson. Hey, Mitch. Joining us from Lehigh. Nicholas, South Utah County. Nicholas, thanks for joining us. Thanks for saying hello. A couple of updates before we dive into the topics. Oh, so the first one, is it a violation of my rights if you don't wear a mask? The reason I ask this is because this is the exact claim that the Department of Education is making. And then a fun story, fun because I know the opinions are going to be very broad and interesting. Should you be paid not to murder somebody? Yes, you heard me right. Should you be paid not to murder somebody? There is a city in this country who is going to be making monthly payments if you agree not to murder. So yeah, we'll talk about that as well. And you can chime in, David and Mary joining us and Sandy. Hey guys, thanks for joining us. Many of you have been very kind. You know that my oldest daughter moved to New Orleans a few months ago. And so you've reached out to me and you've asked how she's doing. I really appreciate that. And it tells me you're listening. And that's always very cool for me. And so I will tell you she's doing fine. I raised a wise child. And so she did not decide to ride it out. She left on Friday night and went down to stay with a friend in Florida. She is still there in Florida. She lives within, I would say her apartment was just outside the eye wall. And so she's among the million people who are out of power. And she's being told they have no idea when they're going to get power back. And so she's now with her two cats and she's trying to figure out, as far as she knows, all of her possessions have survived, but there's no power, which means, and she works in the French Quarter. So if there's no power, there's no job to go back to. So she's in limbo right now. She's trying to decide, does she stay with her friend? Does she drive back here and stay with us? Obviously, we've extended that welcome to her, but her entire life has now been upended for probably at least the next 30 days. And that's just for basic needs. Who knows about infrastructure and other things? So thank you for asking about that, everyone who has. Jenny says, hi, sorry I'm late to the party. That's all right, Jenny. Started a little bit late tonight, so because I was on the phone with somebody. Let's see, I had a couple of other announcements. A reminder, if you are a patron to this program on Podbean or Patreon, I want you to cancel those and come over to jmcfarland.com and become a member there. And the main reason I want to do that is because I have not been able to reward you in the past for your membership, for your patronage. And I can now do that at jmcfarland.com. So we have these cool little levels that you can come in at. And they each come with their own prizes and rewards. Whereas before, you came in at whatever level, and many of you have been very generous, and I couldn't give you anything back except for what everybody else gets for free. So now, if you go to jmcfarland.com, click on Join the Club, you can get ad-free content, exclusive content just for you. In fact, I publish a podcast twice a week that is only available to members. and it's called JMAX Snacks, and it's just all the cool, fun videos that I see during my daily show prep. Then at higher levels, you get access to my books, you get access to my webinars, and the top two levels, you also get access to a JMAX t-shirt, which I know you've been dying to get your hands on. And in fact, I can show you what some of the merch looks like. Here you go. There's some JMAC merch. You can even get a JMAC face mask if you want. And I've got some fun t-shirts here. My favorite t-shirt is this one right here. It says, this was a Ronald Reagan quote. Republicans believe every day is the 4th of July, but the Democrats believe every day is April 15th. So I've got some fun Reagan quotes on there. If you're into t-shirts, whatever. But the bottom line is if you sign up, then you will get a shirt, depending on what level you come in at. If not, you can go and buy one. Jenny says, I want a shirt. That's awesome. Well, thanks, Jenny. The link to that is also at the website if you just want to go on and buy one. Nicholas says, sorry to hear about my daughter. Glad she is okay. Jenny also saying, I'm glad your daughter is safe. Thank you for that. And there's also the saying, tweet others the way you want to be tweeted. Remember that, Jem, from when I was on KSL? So there you go. So we've got JMAC merch now, we've got memberships, and all of this is possible because of your continued support. It's helped me to expand and record more. I'm recording every day now. We're doing lives twice a week. This is all just growing. Heather says, do you have any leftover campaign shirts? Boxes of them. So if you want a JMAC for Congress shirt, my issue is paying for shipping. So I'm not sure how to do. I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. If you come in at any level, at any patron level, I will send you a t-shirt. If you, a campaign t-shirt, because they were pretty nice. The campaign t-shirts were pretty nice. It said JMAC for Congress on the front, and on the back it said JMAC has your back. Should I invite you to my house? I mean, I would love to just give it to you because I have so many of them. So if we can work out a way, Heather, to get you one for free, I would love to do that. Maybe send me an email and we'll figure out how to do it. My email is simple, thejmac@gmail.com. I know I owe April, I don't know if April's on tonight. April, I owe you a campaign t-shirt. And April just came over to jmac.com, jmacfarland.com. So now she's entitled to one of these t-shirts as well. So she's got two shirts coming. But yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, the JMAC for Congress shirts are great for washing cars. They're great for, cleaning up after your pets. They're great for doing yard work. Heather says, I'm just kidding. You promised shirts forever ago, so I'm just teasing. Chris is offering a pickup location. He's there in Sandy. He says we can set up a pickup day in Sandy. Okay. So it's official. It's becoming something. It's getting its own life now. If you guys are interested, I will drop the box off in Sandy at Chris's location. It's pretty centralized there in Sandy. And we'll set a time and you can go and get your JMAC for Congress shirt. If you're interested, let me know and we will gladly do that. You could also go online and buy one. These ones are kind of cool. They're a little bit cooler. I've got one. Did you see? I've got another Reagan quote there. It's this one, the red one. The most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. We have a lot of people saying that nowadays with the whole mask situation. And I don't think they were understanding what Reagan was talking about at the time. Anyway, so if you want shirts, we'll get you shirts. We'll get you shirts. All right, let's dive into this discussion. And some of you have brought this up in the past about the federal government getting involved with schools and their decisions about mask mandates. And I've told you that I want decisions to be as local as possible. And the reason for that is that's how you keep representation alive. The way you kill representation is you federalize everything. Whether or not you think it's a good idea or not for federalization, you destroy representation. Because the minute it becomes federal, you don't have any control over it. I don't have any control over it. So then my need or desire to get involved in the voting process diminishes. Because you've taken those powers away from the local entities. So holding on to representation is all about keeping local controls. So I don't like it when the feds start getting involved, and I resist any time somebody says we should pass a federal program for that very reason, even if the program sounds great, because it's a representation killer. And we can see how, you know, the numbers of people getting involved in politics. Well, no wonder. They don't feel like they're in any control. Because we keep wrestling control from their lives. So all of this is to lead up to, this is really interesting to me, this discussion. So we'll go to, this is actually from the Department of Education website, ed.gov. This is their headline. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights opens investigations into five states regarding prohibitions of universal indoor masks. And one of those states is, congratulations, Utah, you are one of those states. So they are exploring whether statewide prohibitions on universal indoor masking, listen to this, discriminate against students with disabilities. So in essence, what's happening here is both sides are now claiming civil liberties when it comes to mask wearing. One side is saying, you can't make me wear a mask. You don't have the authority to do it. It's my right not to. And the other side is saying, if you don't, you're violating my civil rights. Because I have a right not to breathe in the virus. Now what are we going to do? Both sides are claiming the civil rights argument. This is again from their website. The department has heard from parents from across the country, particularly parents of students with disabilities and with underlying medical conditions, about how state bans on universal indoor masking are putting their children at risk and preventing them from accessing in-person learning equally. This is the U.S. Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardona. He says it's simply unacceptable that state leaders are putting politics over the health and education of the students they took an oath to serve. The department will fight to protect every student's right to access in-person learning safely and the rights of local educators to put in place policies that allow all students to return to the classroom full-time in-person safely this fall. They sent letters to the chief state school officers of Iowa, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Utah, outlining how prohibitions of universal indoor masking prevent school districts from implementing health and safety policies that they determine are necessary to protect students from exposure to COVID-19, including those with underlying medical conditions. Your thoughts on this? Now, if you listened to the JMAC update that I published yesterday, you will know that I have been processing this in my mind, trying to determine if there is any legitimacy to this argument. And where I've landed is, I think, where I've been the whole time. If you would have listened to my show, and many of you did, before COVID, I would have spent a great deal of time talking about civil liberties, smaller government, less government intervention. And now all of a sudden, I am finding myself in a place where I'm talking about the need for government involvement. And it's, wait a minute. You know, it's like, did I abandon all of those beliefs? And so there's been some internal turmoil. I'll be honest with you, as I try and figure out how does this all fit into my conservative belief system of smaller government and less intrusion and civil liberties? And how do I find myself in a place where now I'm saying it's perfectly acceptable for a school district, a county, or a state to require a mask, or for a business? How did I get to that point? And the issue really is that this is not an argument of civil liberties. It's actually an argument of states' rights and state authority. Now, there are people out there who are confused about freedom. They think that we are a 100% free society. Where do they get that? We say it all the time, but we're certainly not free to do whatever we want. We have rules. We have laws. There are people behind bars right now who didn't follow those rules and those laws. So we don't have absolute freedom, but people are acting like we do. And then they think that states don't have any authority of their own. And the truth of the matter is that states have all authority, unless it's specifically mentioned by the Constitution. That's what the 10th Amendment says. It says anything not mentioned in the Constitution is reserved for the states. Now, it doesn't say reserved for the states unless it violates civil liberties. It says unless it's specifically mentioned in the Constitution. So states have the right to limit your freedom. And they do it all the time. That's what a speed limit is. And now you're going to tell me, some will say, well, Jay, that's because driving is a privilege, not a right. Exactly. How did that happen? It happened because driving is not mentioned in the Constitution, so it was reserved for the states. And states were the ones who decided that it was a privilege, not a right. They had the authority to do that. There's not something written in the stars that says driving is a privilege and not a right. There's no scriptural reference there. That was a choice made under state law, because they had the right to do that. Now, you could be saying civil rights, No, they have the right to do that. So they made driving a privilege. Then they put limits on speed. Then they put in seatbelt laws. Then they put in drunk driving laws. They have the authority to pass laws and regulations, and the only restriction is, does it violate the Constitution? That's it. If it's not specifically mentioned in the Constitution, have a ball. Have a ball. And in fact, before the 14th Amendment, states could actually have their own state-run religions. And some of them did. Because the Constitution doesn't say states can't pass laws respecting establishment of religion. The Constitution says Congress shall pass no law respecting the establishment of religion. And so until the 14th Amendment came along, which required equal protection and that any any protection granted the Constitution in the Bill of Rights applied to states. Before that time, states could have a religion because of the way the Constitution was written. So the question, my friends, is not, is it a violation of civil rights? It's not the question. The question is, does it rise to the level of needing intervention by a government? Because why do we have government? I believe government is there to protect rights. And why do we say that driving above a certain speed limit is something we won't allow? Because we've determined in our minds that you become a risk to everyone around you at a certain speed. And so what happens is we're doing a calculation. And this calculation is what I want everybody to think about. The calculation is, at what point does your activity, at what point does the abuse of your freedom have a greater likelihood of taking away the rights and freedom and life of somebody else? Speeding is one of those places, right? Now, some of those things I struggle with a little bit, because it's like, okay, I understand speeding, but what about a seatbelt? That calculation for me is not as simple. But for most of them, that's the question. Okay, so for speeding, we understand that there's a threshold where what you're doing has a greater potential to affect my rights. Driving while intoxicated, perfect example, right? You have a greater likelihood that you're going to take away the life, rights, and freedoms of somebody else. So that's when we're going to step in. That's when the civil liberties argument goes away. Right? But there are still guidelines, that constitutional issues with drunk driving, when you can pull somebody over, when you can search those vehicles, all of those constitutional things still are at play. But you can prosecute somebody as long as you followed those constitutional guidelines. You can punish, arrest and prosecute and punish somebody who has been driving while intoxicated. We're not running around making the civil liberties argument about drinking and driving. Why not? Well, it's pretty obvious, right? It's pretty obvious. We're not running around making that argument because we recognize that drinking while driving has a higher likelihood of affecting somebody else's life. And the same goes for smoking, right? Why did we so willingly and easily take away people's right to smoke? Why? Because there was a threshold that was met, that them smoking around me had a direct impact on my health. And you know what? It wasn't even an immediate impact. It wasn't even a guaranteed impact. It was just over time. But we determined that with smoking, the threshold was high enough to where we took away rights from an entire group of people. And we told them when they can participate in that activity and where. And very few people stood up and made the civil liberties argument, because they understood the calculation, right? They understood. So to me, the only question about COVID and masks, and is it a violation, like the Department of Education is saying, with civil liberties, the only question is, does COVID, its contagiousness, and its mortality rate, and hospitalization rate, and other impacts, because we forget that COVID doesn't just impact other people's health. It impacts our economy. it impacts. I shared the story with you in Orlando where they're asking people not to water their lawns because they don't have the, is it liquid nitrogen? I forget what it is, to treat people, and they need water to create that. So COVID is not just about spreading the illness. It's never been just about that. It's about our jobs, our economy, everything else. The question is, does the risk to other people's lives rise to a level where we can justify the state stepping in and restricting what would otherwise be considered a right? That's, to me, the question. It's not a civil liberties question. And that's the question I will ask from here until the rest of time, anytime the state or federal government wants to pass any type of regulation. What is that calculation? Does it rise to that threshold or not? Let's see, Heather. Hang on, Heather. I want to put your comment on the screen, but it's taking me a minute here. I'm confused with your analogy. If driving is a privilege, therefore laws are put in place to protect people, is going to school considered a privilege? No, actually going to school is considered a right. And that's one thing that the Department of Education is saying, that we've decided as a society, and it's been codified in federal law. I don't know if it's constitutional federal law. I don't know if it's been challenged. But in fact, I'll show you, I can show you the law right here. The investigations will explore each state's compliance with Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, which is a federal law that protects students with disabilities from discrimination based upon their disability. Section 504 guarantees qualified students with disabilities the right to free, appropriate public education in elementary and secondary school. That is the federal law that they are referring to. So you'd have to ask yourself the question, do you think that children have a right to education? Chris is right there. He's the 14th Amendment, Equal Protection Clause. Kids with medical conditions deserve to be able to be kept safe so they can attend school. Department of Ed wants local schools to be able to keep kids safe. So again, this is the equation. At what level is this contagion at? Is it at enough to where your actions have a much higher percentage of impacting the rights and freedoms of somebody else? I was in Lehigh today. I drive by the COVID testing site over by Thanksgiving Point often. Today, the line was down around the corner and up the street. I've never seen it that long before. This Delta variant has changed the approach, I believe, and is an even stronger reason to believe that people going around without masks and unprotected is potentially a violation of somebody else's rights. And that's how it needs to be looked at. That's the math. Not whether or not the states have the right to do so. They do. The Supreme Court has upheld that. They've upheld the businesses have the right. I mean, they do. This is just the way our government works. So instead of being all caught up in the issue of civil liberties, which now both sides are claiming, we should recognize how our government functions and that we do have a system that does limit civil liberties all the time when we can prove that the threshold is high enough. And it's interesting to me that people thought that the threshold was high enough with smoking. Secondhand smoke. Now compare secondhand smoke to the mortality rate of COVID. Secondhand smoke may impact you if you're faced with it for, I don't, you know, I have to go back and look at the studies, but doesn't it require some level of continued exposure? Some people are like, I just have a right to not smell like smoke and I have a right to breathe fresh air. Well, do I have a right to breathe contagion-free air? It's the threshold, because we don't do it for the cold. We don't even do it for the flu. And the flu can be deadly, right? So you have to ask the question, what is it between the flu and COVID and now the Delta variant that makes us believe that this rises to that level? This is the logic that I choose to employ. And Chris, I put this on the screen before I was able to talk about it. Section 504 is tied directly to the 14th Amendment. And I will just tell you, Chris is very familiar with this particular portion of law because he deals with it in his business every single day. So that is the question. Do you believe that COVID is dangerous enough to justify mandates on a local, state, or federal level? Not do you believe it's a violation of civil rights? That's a distraction. And to me, it is a lack of understanding of how the federal and state government works. And it's a distraction that doesn't do us any good, you know. And perhaps that distraction is there because of a lack of leadership. I don't know. I really don't know. Mitt Romney has been making some interesting comments here lately that I wanted to share with you. He says, Romney blamed the cultural and political war over masks and vaccines on misinformation. He said, the people who are vaccine hesitant are also authority hesitant. They don't trust the media. They don't trust politicians when they say vaccines are a good idea. They tune it out and turn to the internet when they can find people who are anonymous giving them bad information. He says school boards should be allowed to decide the best course of action for their students and teachers when it comes to masks. We should keep the decision-making as close to the people as possible. School boards should be able to decide what is right for their children and district. I agree with him on that. He said, I would love for the school district where my grandchildren are going to provide for their safety. Now, there is even a line there, though, because if you've calculated that not wearing a mask is going to threaten the lives of more children, then what if your school district chooses unwisely? At what point is this a civil rights debate on the other end? And Romney said something else there I wanted to get to. He said, people say I want my liberty. Well, your liberty affects my health. When that occurs, we have to come to some sort of agreement. I love the way he put that. And you know I don't always agree with Romney. You know I've gone after him on several occasions. But I love the way he says that. He says, people say I want my liberty. Well, your liberty affects my health. When that occurs, we have to come to some sort of agreement. The reason I love that language is because it's like, can't we just get over ourselves? Can't we just say, okay, I recognize that you're concerned about your health and getting COVID and I might spread it. So let's come to an agreement as civilized people. And you're gonna recognize that in certain places I'm gonna not wear it, like when I'm outside or whatever, but when we're inside, you know, can't we come to some type of civilized adult agreement? I don't know what you think about that. Jeff says speed limit laws, DUI laws, smoking laws all relate to restricting limiting activities. Can you help come up with examples we currently have here where we are required to do a certain activity in consideration of keeping others' rights unrestricted? That's a good question. I will tell you there are examples where laws don't follow that same calculation. Like, I don't know, is it legal to walk around? Can I go outside in Lehigh and walk around Lehigh buck naked? Or am I required to cover up certain parts? Do you guys know the law? I haven't looked it up, but can you just walk around exposing yourself? Chris says vaccines in school, which are required by state law. I think that's a good example, Chris. But there are laws that are passed for other reasons where we restrict freedoms. The reason that I chose speed limit DUI is because I believe there is a direct comparison between them. Because we're talking about you breathing out a contagion and somebody else breathing it in. And so in closed indoor quarters, I'm going to say, while this contagion is among us, and while the majority of us are unvaccinated, then I'm going to say you need to cover up your mouth because it will reduce the spread of that contagion dramatically. It's like saying, because of the potential for your speeding to influence somebody else's rights and freedoms, I'm going to say there is a limitation. To me, there is a direct connection between those examples, and that's why I use them. The one that I think there is the greatest connection to is smoking, because we literally took away the rights of business owners to have smoking establishments. We took the rights away of people. They can't smoke in front of a business. They can't smoke in many public areas. We literally just cleaned out their rights. And I happen to believe that the Delta variant is much more deadly and much more immediate than anything that secondhand smoke is going to do to you. And I might be wrong on that, but you can send me the studies, but that's where I stand right now. And when we took away those smokers' rights, nobody cried civil liberties. Maybe the smokers did. But did you? I mean, that's curious. If you were somebody who thinks you have a civil right to wear a mask, were you out there protesting in the streets against smokers losing their rights? Because I happen to believe that a lot of people only make the civil rights argument when it affects them directly. There are a lot of people who would make the civil rights argument, but then support certain laws that restrict freedoms for religious purposes. Like, they want laws to be in place based upon their religious belief. They believe we're a Judeo-Christian society, and so laws should step in and restrict certain activities for religious reasons. And there are people who would support that on one hand, and on the other hand say, you cannot tell me I have to wear a mask. That is a violation of my civil rights. So I think there are some conflicts here that people are not seeing. But for me, smoking was a perfect example. And you know who? You guys were not listening to me then. Some of you listening are my Dallas audience. But do you know who was out making the civil rights argument for smokers back then? I was. Now, I didn't want them to be able to smoke in the workplace. But I thought that it was too much to ban smoking from all establishments. I thought that you ought to have a right as a business owner to have a smoking establishment. If people want to work in smoke and they want to go to a place where there's smoke, they ought to have the right to do that. And so my thought was, this was my suggestion when all of this happened, my suggestion was that you issue smoking permits just like you issue alcohol permits. And that way smokers could at least know there were 5 or 6 or 10 places in town that they could go to and they could smoke their lives away and still feel like that was not taken from them. And if you don't think that's a possibility, go to Las Vegas, where just about everywhere in the world, smoking is not allowed, but you go into casinos and they're all still smoking. So that was my thought back then, because I was concerned. I am concerned anytime we want to restrict freedoms. I am typically the first one out saying, okay, tell me how you justify this. That's why it's so fascinating to me that I'm now on the other side of the equation. But I feel that I'm being consistent here in the argument. But I'm just curious, were you crying civil rights fouls for smokers? Are you fighting today to restore the rights of smokers? Because I don't see any difference between taking away the right for somebody to smoke in public or in a restaurant and asking somebody to wear a mask during a serious contagion. Because what you breathe out is the issue. And if I can make it so you can still breathe, but you don't breathe out a highly contagious contagion, that seems justifiable to me. All right, any other thoughts on that before we move on to the fun one? I hope that I have made sense to you. If you disagree, please share with me and let me know because I want to consider your viewpoint on this. Oh, I did have this story too. Let's share this with you. I shared this in the update. I don't remember if I shared it with you guys. But there's this... Did I share with you? Did I talk about this drug? I think I did. This is a feed store in Argyle, Texas. Argyle Feed and Hardware. They say they've been selling out of the drug ivermectin because of the rumors being posted around social media that it prevents or cures COVID. Ivermectin is used to combat internal parasites. It can be prescribed for humans, but it is also used on animals. And so people have heard these rumors on the internet, fake news, whatever you want to call it. And they're rushing out, and this is something the CDC is happening across the country, that ivermectin for animals has been causing people to go to feed stores and purchase this stuff and take it. And there's an unfortunate story of a police officer who was an anti-vaxxer. He took ivermectin and got COVID. And he died. Now, I don't have any information that he died from the ivermectin, but he did die from COVID, and he did not get vaccinated. And it's fascinating to me that somebody, it goes back to what Mitt Romney said, is that anti-vaxxers are not just anti-vax, they are anti-authority. And they believe that they are being lied to at all levels. And so I've told you what happens when you get into that situation. You become ripe for manipulation. When you're taught that every single source cannot be trusted, people who want you to believe that are people who want to manipulate you. They want to manipulate you out of your dollars. They want to manipulate you into whatever it is that they're trying to sell. That's why they do that. Because the truth is, that there is no international COVID scandal. There is no conspiracy here. And are there elements? Are there issues? Have there been changes in what we know and understand about COVID and those types of things? Absolutely. But the problem is, anybody. I just want general rule, general guideline from JMAC. Anytime somebody tells you that you can't trust the media, you can't trust the government, and that the only person you can trust is them, they're trying to manipulate you. And they will manipulate you. And this police officer was manipulated into believing that he couldn't trust the medical world, couldn't trust the world governments. And so instead, he would trust internet rumors about ivermectin. That's very sad. Here's a sign that they have up in their store. Warning, the active ingredients in several of the dewormers we keep in stock is ivermectin. These are labeled for animal use only. It is not safe nor approved for human use. And the animal variety can cause major issues because it's much higher dosage, because animals are much bigger than us, and because we process these things very differently. So I believe that we have so many people who are ripe for manipulation because they have been told for years that they cannot trust. They cannot trust. They cannot trust. And the people telling them that are all people who want to manipulate them. Let's see, before we move on to the next story, this is David. He says, I can understand people who don't want to trust the government. I just wish they would apply the same level of scrutiny to the random things they see online. I think that's a great point. You know, okay, fine, don't trust the government, but man, don't just trust every little post that comes your way. Put that same level of scrutiny. You know, I was having this conversation with my son, and I remember I was explaining to him how we would verify information back in my day when I was a kid, right? And, you know, nowadays we will get in a discussion about who was that, you know, that said that or whatever. And we forget there's a device right there and we could just ask the device and the information comes. And I'm like, you know, back in my day, we had these encyclopedias. All the information in the encyclopedias was outdated. Your only choice then was to go to the library and use the index system and the Dewey Decimal System and to find books. And of course, the nature of books is everything in the books is going to be outdated. And so if you would have told me back then, there will be a day when you can access all of this information at your fingertips. And then you would have asked me, do you think people would be more informed during that time or less informed? I think people are less informed than ever. In a time when we have more information at our fingertips. And I think it's because we now actively weed out any opposing ideas. And then social media does that. Excuse me. They do that because they only feed us what they know we'll like. And so we're not challenged anymore. We don't take the time, I don't know, do a search for ivermectin. I don't know. This is Terry. Terry says, I don't care anymore. I wear a mask to protect me. Let the chips fall where they may. I will grieve for the children and parents will have to live with the outcome and possible long-term choices. She says, you can choose to do anything. You cannot choose the consequences. Yeah, it's a very good point. I just can't sit back and just say that, well, you know, they'll catch it and they'll die and that's on them. I can't do that. I've never been that person. I've got to speak up. I've got to try and change hearts and minds. But not only that, they are affecting us in their choices and their decisions. And you are right to wear a mask to protect yourself from them. And that is the correct move, obviously, to protect yourself from the bad choices of other people. Have to keep trying to get to a point where we get back to, you know, not being a leaf in the wind, not being so ripe for manipulation at every turn. So that's me. Anyway, thank you, Terry. Here's Chris. Chris says, my biggest argument with the choice argument is that you wearing a mask protects me and me wearing a mask protects everyone else. Yeah. And again, it's that equation, right? What is that threshold where we say, because we don't do it with the flu. So and the flu is deadly. The flu can kill people. It does kill people every year. And we've never had a society with the flu, at least in modern times, where we've even suggested mandating wearing a mask, even though we know, and it's now been absolutely proven with the pandemic, that wearing a mask would severely limit the spread of the flu and would save a lot of lives. But this has never come up with the flu. It's never risen to that level. And the question is why? The question is because we tolerate a certain level of disease spread among us because we hesitate to take away rights and freedoms from individuals. There are a lot of things that we could mandate that could save a lot of lives, but we don't, because we do try and err on the side of freedom. And that's a fight that I will always be involved in. But what is that threshold? Again, we keep coming back to that. Okay, let's go over to San Francisco. San Francisco will begin paying people to not shoot other people. Let me say it one more time. San Francisco will begin paying people to not shoot other people. Now, I might surprise you with my take on this story. I might. The program will be called the Dream Keeper Fellowship. Can you see that? Well, I just tried to highlight it. The Dream Keeper Fellowship, though likely to be dubbed Cash for Criminals in the media, it will pay select people $300 a month to avoid gun incidents. San Francisco's 56-year low homicide rate of 2019 was not sustained. This happened across the country. If you would have looked at murder rates and crime rates, generally across the country, they'd been going down and down. And then the pandemic came along and things spiked. Gun violence spiked pretty much everywhere once the COVID-19 pandemic hit. San Francisco saw just 14 homicides in 2019, then 15 in 2020. By the end of July 2021, they already have 21. In October, the city will begin a highly unconventional solution. The Examiner reports on a pilot program to begin that will essentially offer high-risk individuals $300 a month not to shoot anyone or be shot themselves. Do you like fill out a form? It's like an online form, because how do they know if you shot somebody? You're not going to report it, especially if you lose your $300. So again, it's called the Dreamkeeper Fellowship. Is born from San Francisco Police Department data showing that more than half of all San Francisco gun killings involve the same 12 criminal groups and gangs. The idea is to target those at high risk of being on either end of a shooting with a $300 monthly payment. Subjects could then receive up to $200 extra for other milestones, like getting a job interview, complying with probation conditions, or participating in a mentoring program. Heather asked the question, so are they paying criminals to not kill criminals? This is Felix on Twitch. Hey, Felix. He says, to answer your title question, no. Well, don't. Hang on, Felix. He says, what we're talking, this is Criminal Justice Reform Executive Director David Muhammad. He says, what we're talking about is saying we're going to invest resources in a 25-year-old who has 8 previous arrests, who is on parole, who is a proud member of a neighborhood clique, and who is not even seeking services. He says it's just not a popular decision to make and may not be politically palatable. But that's what you have to do in order to reduce gun violence. The fellowship is slated to launch as a small program in October. There will be only 10 participants at first, which would ramp up to 30 by the end of the year. Now, before you jump to conclusions on this, What if I told you it works? You know, I've talked about these. There are programs being tried, some in California and other places, where they're giving people a minimum income. And, you know, people claim that it causes them to do less, gives them a reason not to go back to work. The studies, and they're still early on, have actually shown that this type of thing can be beneficial. And in fact, they mention here, the idea has been tried before, notably in the California communities of Richmond and Stockton. And there it got the desired result. A 2019 study in the American Journal of Public Health said 55% fewer deaths and hospital visits, 43% fewer gun crimes. But ironically, they had unexpected increases in non-firearm violence. The idea has already been dubbed as cash for criminals by conservative media, and even The Daily Show did a rather mocking segment on it. So, here's my question to you. What if it works? What if this craziness works? Heather says the next thing will be to pay drug dealers to not sell drugs. It sounds so crazy. And I want to tell you what my answer is, and I'm going to admit to you up front that it may be purely an emotional answer, and I don't know what to do about it, and I'm still processing it. I don't care if it works. I don't want to do it. It is the most backwards, insane, maddening thing that I could ever think of to solve a problem. And I have got to think that there's got to be a different way. And so just because it works doesn't make it right. I'm going to have to watch these studies and see how it turns out. But honestly, my first blessed reaction when they say it works is, so what? It's not right. And so can we invest in communities? Can we provide other type of incentives? Can we do something else? Is this really the only solution we have to pay somebody not to commit a crime? That's my first blush response. Felix on Twitch, if handing out money worked, we wouldn't have generational welfare. It depends on how you handle out how you hand out the money, right? But I would tend to believe the better answer is to solve the issues of poverty and those types of things. And then you will put a dent in this. I think that what's happening is you're taking the path of least resistance and you're saying it works. What I want to know is, are you having a long-term impact? Or are you making the status quo a little bit better, but the status quo continues forward? And that's what I don't know. And so I admit to you openly, I'm giving it an emotional response, but that's what I would want to see. If you could tell me that paying a criminal not to shoot somebody eventually equates to that person not being a criminal at all, but now being employed and not receiving any money, and now that translates into their children avoiding the gang life that they were in, you know what I mean? And then you had community change and generational change and those types of things. If you could draw those lines for me, then as crazy as the headline is, I might come along with you for the ride. It's not enough for me to say that, oh, they tried it for a year and deaths went down. It's not enough. It's not enough. David says, invest in mental health. It's a huge issue. Heather says that this convo is giving my husband an ulcer. I knew it would. I knew it would, Heather. That's why I was so excited to bring it to you. Chris says, Dems need better marketing, better headlines. San Francisco invested in programs to keep potential violent individuals out of gangs and changing their path. Yeah, Chris, maybe you should be their PR person. You know, but they came up with this cool name. What was the name? The Dream Keeper Fellowship. Yeah, that's not helping. I don't know if any kind of headline or label you could put on this, Chris. I don't know if it changes it. Because the simple fact of the matter is they're paying people to not shoot other people. Let's see Felix again on Twitch. He says, they say it works because it's a tax grab. More schools, voucher programs make education competitive. The culture changes. It's about education and family. Well, to be fair, Felix, a lot of these programs, these pilot programs, they weren't tax dollars. These living wage programs that people have been put on. I think there's one in Bakersfield and other places. There's a name for it, and I can't think of the name for some reason. One of you will remind me. The studies that I've seen, they're not using tax dollars right now. These are just studies from outside organizations saying, we want to see if this works. Now, maybe it's all a long-term plan to grab tax dollars. I'm different than a lot of people who believe that, you know, people who run these kind of programs are evil and it's just a tax grab and they have, you know, all of these agendas. I happen to believe that these are very well-intentioned people. I just don't know if they understand the unintended consequences of their actions. And my concern is that usually what the government is best at is writing checks and creating debt. And when you look at programs that really work, they involve a really deep level of community involvement. And it's just something that the feds or state governments can't pull off. And so I would typically frown on these type of programs, but look, I'm here to tell you the truth. I'm not here to hide behind anything. They have done some studies and they've showed some positive results initially. And I don't think that we should just ignore that. But some positive initial results is not a reason to do it either. It could be a reason to say, okay, let's find other solutions instead of paying people not to, you know, I mean, because there's just so many arguments. Like I'm going to be brutally honest with you guys. I haven't shot anybody in a couple of years at least. So I'm due some money. Right? I mean, that's where you get into the problem where you're, you know, the everyday law abiding is now writing a check to people who are not law abiding to pay them to be law abiding. And fundamentally, that just isn't right. So in my mind, we've got to be smart enough. We've got to be able to find another way. Maybe there isn't one. I don't know. I have to believe there is. And that this is the shortest path, the easiest path to some short-term results. And the path of least resistance is not going to be the long-term solution. Generally, that's the way it works. All right, my friends, any other comments on any of that? I do want to, I'll share this with you quickly. How long have we been going here? An hour and 8 minutes. I do, and if you want to know my opinion on Afghanistan and Biden and Trump and who's to blame for all that, go back and listen to my other previous podcast. I have detailed the entire situation to you ad nauseum. We have gone through it. But if you're not sure, or if you're blaming one and you think the other one is totally not culpable, then I suggest you go back and listen. But there is a part of me today that feels a huge sense of relief that we don't have troops in Afghanistan today. And I would have felt that way if this had been carried out by Trump or if it had been carried out by Biden. I don't know how you feel, but for me, I do have a huge sense of relief. I do lament that there are still people in Afghanistan who want to leave. There are still Americans in Afghanistan. And as I've said, there's no perfect resolution here. That anyone hoping for that and blaming the other side because they didn't act perfectly, they're trying to manipulate you. They're selling something. But I do feel a sense of relief today. But I'm not naive. Afghanistan's going to be in the news, and it's going to be on our radar, and it's going to be a pesky problem for the United States for a long time. And so we're not over that. And we may have just provided a greater path to that. But I just wanted to share that with you. And one other thing I'll share with you, because I think Chris spent so much time putting it together, is this. You know, if you've been listening, that Carl the Cricket has been invading our show. He's set up camp right outside of my window, and I have yet to be able to get rid of him. And, oh, really? Chris put this graphic together for me. Chris, it's in the wrong format for me to share with everybody. But I can solve that. Give me just a second here. Here we go. Everybody hang on. Can you hear Carl? Can you hear him in the background? You know what? You know what I'm going to do? Chris, since you took the time to put this together, we should make Carl... We should make his own t-shirt, because I just rolled out the J-Mac t-shirts. Do you guys want a Carl? Why isn't Carl coming up now? Do you want a Carl the Cricket t-shirt? Okay. It's still not coming up. I thought it was so cool. Hang on. I'm going to try one more thing, because I know Chris worked so hard on this. Hang on, Chris. This is a horrible way to end. You're supposed to end on a high note. Will this be worth the wait? No, because it's not appearing on the screen. Unbelievable. Okay, I've got one more way to do this. We'll see if this works. Hang on. That, and then I'll go here. There we go. It's so big. There he is. Was it worth it, everybody? There is Carl the Cricket, in case you were wondering. Do you want a Carl the Cricket t-shirt? I'll add him to the merchandise shop. All right, everyone. Thank you for hanging on. Thank you for joining me tonight. Remember, join the JMAC Club, $5 a month or more. I think David says it was worth it. Perfection. All right. You're going to have to send me a higher quality file, though, if you want me to make that into a t-shirt, Chris. So as I was saying, go to jmcfarland.com, join the club. There's great prizes, t-shirts, books, webinars, all kinds of stuff, starting at $5 a month. Many of you have been doing this for a couple of years now. without any rewards. So I thank you for that. But now I want to return the favor. So go to jmcfarland.com and check it out. With that, join me again live on Thursday night at 9:30. Everybody, I hope you have a wonderful evening.